You're with Rachel and Ken and our special guest castaway, which is just a real treat to have Shannon Hoagland in the studio. Welcome, Shannon. Happy to have you.
Thanks for inviting me. I feel honored.
We are we're going to cast you away.
Yeah, it's not pretty.
No, it's not. It's not pretty. And when you get back from the casting away, you will be on an island, and we're going to then discover what 10 songs you would choose to have if stranded, perhaps forever, on that island. Here comes the storm.
Cast down legend.
Watch out!
Woman overboard!
Well, Shannon, you've landed on an island, and you're on the beach. First thing, take a look around and tell us what kind of an island you are on.
This is a pretty standard island. Sandy, a few trees. There's some water somewhere, so I don't have to worry about that. But enough shade so I can get out of the weather. No bugs.
That's
big plus.
Good call.
Wow.
And that's perfectly legal maneuver right
and
there.
A little bit of a breeze, not too much.
And monkeys?
Yeah, we got to know about
monkeys. No, there's no monkeys.
No monkeys.
No thank you.
No monkey business.
No, thank you. The monkeys are the worst. I feel very fortunate to have landed on an island with no monkeys. Yes.
Well, we asked you to come up with a list of 10 songs, and we're going to be playing that music tonight and talking a little bit about why and how that list was created. Before we get to the list, let's talk about how you came to the island of upon which we sit, Baranof Island. And how did you make your way to Sitka? When and how?
I came up the same summer as you, I believe. I came up summer of 1990, and I had gone to college with James Polson, who is the son of the editors of the Sentinel. And I ended up with an internship for the summer. I was filling in for Will Swagel and Alan Sikora, two great reporters I worked with for a while. And then at the end of the summer, they decided to add a third reporter. This was back in the days when the pulp mill was still operating. Sitka was extremely prosperous, and they had the resources there to have a third reporter. I mean, it's kind of funny to think about it. One time we had four reporters.
Wow.
So that's how I ended up here, and I never left. That was, 24 years ago this May.
Where were you going to school?
I went to school at Colgate University. It's a small liberal arts college in upstate New York, and James was one of my best friends there. And, he's still one of my really good friends.
Do you remember, many of us know James, we see him riding around town on his bicycle.
Yes.
or at events
camera.
With his camera. Do you remember the first moment that you saw or met James?
Yes,
at college?
I do.
He was,
I'd heard about him before because I had a friend who was in an Italian class with James, and the Italian teacher called him Giacomo. And so that's how I always knew him. And James was doing an art show, and I was the art gallery monitor. So that's how we met. And, he's the same as he is today. Absolutely the same, yeah.
Giacomo.
Yeah. I wouldn't push it with that. He prefers to be called James. And then we were on the newspaper together, and we wrote on the crew team together. And we had a lot of the same friends. And we stayed in touch after graduation, and that it was just 2 years after. And he's the one that kind of put in a good word for me for the job.
Nice.
I'll bet some days he might regret it, but.
Well, I've got to check on a detail here. You said you were an art gallery monitor?
Yes. It was the best job on campus. We had a gallery, an art gallery, in the library. So, and when you came in, it was called the Cloakroom Gallery, and so it was a gallery for student shows. And so I could sit there, and I could do my homework, and I didn't really know anything about art. That wasn't a job requirement, apparently. And I had to make sure, I guess, that no one stole the art. I can't think of any art that anyone would have wanted to steal because it was your basic student art.
But did you have to perfect your shh?
I didn't have to shush people, but I did call campus security when someone got out of hand with the keg.
With the keg. There was a keg in your art gallery?
Someone rolled one in, and that's, instead of being a brave person, I was a coward. And I called campus security and pretended it was anonymous.
I think when a keg rolls into an art gallery, it's the perfectly appropriate thing to do.
I know, but why didn't I just go with the flow, you know, and just partied with the people? I was afraid of getting in trouble. So, yeah, I shut it down.
Wow.
Shut that thing down.
See, the island, no monkey business.
Right, no monkey business.
Oh, gosh.
Well, let's move over. We want to play a little music tonight as well as hear some good stories. What did you enjoy the process of putting together your 10 songs?
I did. I had to think about it a lot because I had planned on doing it one way, thinking it was super original. And then when you told me that a lot of, you know, like some people do it that way, and I was like, oh, some people do it that way. So it was going to be like a sentimental mishmash of Peter Frampton and Barry Manilow.
I don't believe it.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Real, okay.
I have no taste. I'm sorry.
But you instead did what?
Instead, I decided to picture what songs would be interesting, songs that I haven't yet figured out, or songs that take me to a different place. So most of these songs are from movies.
Mm-hmm.
They're songs I first heard in movies and later discovered when I had a show, or the first... I guess that's it. The movie, I liked them when I saw them. I didn't realize they weren't written for the show.
Mm-hmm.
And then some of them are Broadway musicals. I have two that aren't related to anything. I just like them. But everything else, I figured if I was on a desert island, I would like something that I would never get tired of listening to. If I picked some of my favorite songs, I would get tired of them really quickly. That's what I was afraid of. So mm-hmm. These are songs that I thought would be musically interesting, or they would take me to the show where I saw them, the movie where I saw them, and these are all movies that I really liked. And so that's kind of...
That's good thinking, I think.
Well, I was trying to be practical.
Right.
I was trying to be practical. Did you ever see the movie Into the Thin Air? I mean, not to get too far afield.
Yeah.
Not Into Thin Air. It's the movie about, it's called Touching the Void.
Oh, yeah.
And in the movie, the guy is struggling to get, you know, he's every bone is broken. He's crawling across the rocks. Mm-hmm. And this song is just like driving him crazy. And so I was hoping like I would pick songs that wouldn't be like that. Like that was the goal.
Well, let's dive in and find out a little bit about these songs. So mm-hmm. we're going to start off with a tune from Nat
Bones,
King Cole. So no injuries will be sustained tonight in the making of this radio show. The tune from Nat King Cole, I really like this song, and I'm glad we're going to start off with it because the Stardust Ball is something that is dear and near to Raven Radio's heart, but you have
own,
a history
I do,
with
but
that
I
as
like
well.
It better now that Raven has it.
Well,
Raven
tell us,
does such
what
a wonderful
was the, what
job.
Was the history that you have with the Stardust
the
Ball?
My history with Stardust Ball is it used to be the Film Society's main fundraiser, and it used to be a colossal fundraiser. They'd raise about $5,000 a year, and that would be enough to fund the money losing season of the Second Film Society. And, it was very boozy, and it was the only party in town, and under my tutelage, it it's not really my thing, like, putting on, like, a dance with, you know, lots of alcohol, and I don't know anything about music and picking bands. Anyway, it was great when Raven, the Sitka Film Society could hand it off to Raven, which has done such a great job with it. But, yeah, we always had a local band. We never had the resources to bring in an outside band and really take it up a notch. And, you know, the last few times we did it, we were raising so little money, we were just like, how about next year we each put in $100 and call it good and not put on this dance anymore.
Well, thank you for it. We love it.
Yeah, I love it too. So
well, how did
it's worked out.
How did Stardust from Nat King Cole end up starting your list here?
There is so many great versions of Stardust. So many wonderful versions. The reason I like this one so much is that it is it includes the verse, and very few versions of Stardust do. It's written by Hoagy Carmichael, mm-hmm. and this one it's the opening sequence for a movie called My Favorite Year, And I had no idea when I saw My Favorite Year. It's a wonderful story about television in the 50s. I had no idea who Nat King Cole was. I didn't know anything about him. I saw the movie with my dad, among other people. It's one of the movies that I know kind of line by line, mm-hmm. kind of romanticizes show business, romanticizes live television, as well as Errol Flynn. Peter O'Toole's in the movie. And when I played this the first time, I did an intro to it, and right after that, I got a call from Steve Will, and he never called me during my shows, but I know he listened because he likes old-time jazz, and he just said, that was amazing, that intro you did. So, I mean, I always think of that when I play this on my show.
And now the purple dusk of twilight time steals across the meadows of my heart. High up in the sky, the little stars climb, always reminding me that we're apart. You wander down the lane and far away, leaving me a song that will not die. Love is now the stardust of yesterday, the music of the years gone by. Sometimes I wonder why I spend the lonely night dreaming of a song. The melody haunts my reverie, and I am once again with you. When our love was new, and each kiss an inspiration, but that was long ago. Now my consolation is in the stardust of a song beside a garden wall. When stars are bright, you are in my arms. The nightingale tells his fairy tale, a paradise where roses bloom. Though I dream in vain, in my heart it will remain, my stardust melody, the memory of love's refrain. Thank you.
Beautiful song from Django Reinhardt. And we have Shannon Hoagland in the studio with us, our guest castaway, with her 10 songs she would choose to have if stranded perhaps forever on an island. Shannon, tell us about that song and how it made your list.
Oh, this song, I had to include Django Reinhardt somewhere because he's my top two jazz artists. He's just always delivers a solid song. The song I chose is from a very dreamy and existential film called L.A. Story. It's starring Steve Martin. It's really funny movie, but it's also about life and what's important about life, where he drives down the highways looking for answers, and he gets advice from a highway sign which speaks to him.
I love that movie.
Yeah, it's fun. Yeah, and that also has a number of great songs in it, but there's a couple Django Reinhardt, Stefan Grappelli songs. And the other artist on there is Enya. I don't know how to pronounce that, Enya. But both of these artists, I think, help create an atmosphere mm-hmm. that's really dreamy, where he's not sure if he's awake or dreaming,
right.
or if things are really happening or not. And a lot of the jokes in that movie, I don't know if you agree, are kind of, they get tired really fast, but I think overall it's a really sweet romantic comedy. And
it was very L.A. Yeah. I lived in L.A. for a while.
Oh.
And it was definitely L.A. jokes. L.A. making fun of L.A.
It was supposed to be the 20 best movie set in L.A., like the mm-hmm. the one that's most authentic or kind of hits the mark.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
of all the movies.
Did. I saw it actually when I lived there, and it was like, wow.
Yeah.
That's L.A.
Yep.
When we talked last, you said that you showed up in Sitka in 1990, mm-hmm. which is indeed the year that I showed up, and that you just never left. Was there a highway sign giving you advice about what to do with your life? What was it about Sitka and the Sentinel?
The sign was like, you'll never get another job again. That was the road sign. It's like, you're lucky to have a job.
Well, where did you... where had you grown up? Where were you born?
I grew up in Bellevue. I was born in Seattle and moved to from Magnolia neighborhood to the suburbs. You know, and my parents climb up the ladder of success. And yeah, I spent my whole life in Bellevue, except for going to school on the East Coast. And yeah, I came right back.
What made you
in Seattle?
What made you head off to the East Coast instead of going to, you know, one of the schools on the West Coast?
That is a great question, because I wouldn't have had all the loans that I did. but I grew up watching movies, and I grew up reading children's books, and, you know, they weren't children's books at the time, they were just books that were set in New York. I had this idea about what New York would be like and what the East Coast would be like there would be more culture, and, mm-hmm. you know, it would be I would be in a competitive atmosphere in school. People would be better read, and I guess I was kind of a snob. I went to a private school when I was in high school. It was very competitive, so everyone was applying to those schools. We didn't give it a second thought. I mean, a full 20% of our class went to the University of Washington, so it wasn't like, you know, people didn't consider going local, but I had this idea in my mind of what a school on the East Coast would be like. I wanted to experience it, mm-hmm. and I'm glad I did. Like, if I had visited this school, I never would have gone there, ever, ever, ever. I had nothing in common with anyone. That's how James and I found each other. We had nothing in common with anyone, absolutely nothing. Wow. People were a lot more, I would say, a little colder, a little harder to get to know. Yeah, I mean, I went to a school that everyone called friendly, like one of the friendliest campuses. But growing up in Seattle, everyone was friendly. I mean, mm-hmm. Seattle's a friendly city, so I didn't know what they were talking about when I went there. It's like, oh, Colgate's such a friendly campus. And academically, it was very cutthroat. And then it had the whole fraternity scene. It was a big party scene. And it was huge growth for me in terms of like being able to explore the world. So when people say, oh, I'm going to visit all these campuses, it's like, okay, you can do that and you can find where the best fit is for you. But You might be missing out on an experience that you are afraid to have. So I know I would have ended up at UW if I had visited that school. I absolutely know it.
Yeah.
Well, and then you ended up visiting Sitka, so kind of coming back to the West Coast. What was it about Sitka, really, that kept you here?
No, I'm really not joking. It was a job. It was 100% the job. After I graduated from college, there was no jobs, and I was too depressed to look. Like, you know, college being over, where you had all these great conversations with people, and every night you're watching David Letterman and making jokes and, you know, having dinner with friends, and you were around, you know, after 4 years together, you had a lot in common with these people. And just not being able to find, you know, all my old friends were gone from mm-hmm. high school, and you know, I was temping. I wasn't even looking for work. Like, I was just, there wasn't a lot of work to begin with because there was a recession after the 1987 stock market crash. And so, I mean, I know there were jobs at Microsoft. I just didn't know. I had no wherewithal. So when I got a call, I called James one day, and he was like, oh, we have an opening this summer. You should apply. And, you know, I was just kind of in this depressed phase. I was, you know, working at a consulting company, making copies and putting copies into binders. And so I wasn't in the mood. And so I have this really good friend, Jane. And Jane, like, actually completed her resume. Jane wanted the job, too. But she was such a good friend. She helped me with my resume. She made sure I spelled Sentinel right. And Yeah, it was tough.
Is Jane still stuffing binders?
Yes, Jane does not have very... Yeah, yeah, Jane is still doing that. She's not temping, but she's a little depressed, but she's still a very good friend of mine. She comes up and visits and loves Sitka and all that. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Well, we...
I'm sorry. I shouldn't just say it was the work. I mean, the Polson family took me in as a member of their family, and that was huge. And then I met, you know, one of the best friends of my life, my first day in town, Lisa Bush. Mm-hmm. I was extremely lucky. And within a year, Heather McLean, Gretchen Homer, the two Polson sisters, my first summer, became two of my best friends. So it was just like right away, bam, 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 bam. Great group of people. Sometimes people come to this town and they can't break in, and I didn't have that because of the Polsons and all the connections I had with them, and so that made it home. So I shouldn't just say it was a job, but the job was huge, and I don't know what I would have done without a job here.
But the home,
yeah,
nice. Well put. We have a song coming up that is from Evita, so I want you to prepare to tell us a little bit about it, but I also think I need it. I think that
you do need it.
That you have
yes.
it, and I need to get it ready to play.
What I want you to do here.
What we've got.
Okay, here it is. So we have to, let's just like talk over the song. It's the second song on here. We're
going
to start off with the Requiem, but I'm not really interested in the Requiem. This has like a tiny bit of sentiment, but not a huge amount. When I've always been into theater and plays,
number two,
yeah. And you can start playing it. I mean, we kind of want
Turn it down
It's going to get really loud. Yeah. This is at the beginning of the show, and it's basically the funeral for Ava Perón. Andrew Lloyd Webber wrote the music for this, and it's a lovely, wonderful soundtrack. So my sister, when she was... I have an older sister and two younger sisters. My older sister, when she was in 10th grade, went off to New York City on a school trip, and it sounded like a giant blast, a giant party. She came home with the soundtrack to Evita, and we listened to nothing else for weeks and weeks and weeks. And she was talking about the Broadway shows and all that stuff. And for me, theater had always been very local. It had never been something like the movies where, you know, people were big stars. And mm-hmm. so that was this show for me, like Broadway, theater on a big stage. She made us all watch the Tonys. This song has always stuck with me, not this, what we're listening to.
Yeah,
but about 3 minutes in, you'll hear like a magical transition, and I think I'll never get tired of listening to that. So mm-hmm. I don't know where we are in the song.
Let's see, we're looking at probably another minute and a half before that magical transition.
Okay, I'm afraid of turning up the Requiem because I'm afraid people will hear it and turn off the radio.
Okay, so we'll just keep on going because you said that you grew up watching movies and you're very involved with movies here in Sitka. Mm-hmm. You were that was part of the nonprofit organization mm-hmm. that you're such a part of. Did you ever do any acting?
No, acting has never been an interest of mine. I acted in high school, and when I was younger, I acted enough to know that it was difficult for me, you know. So I participated a little bit in theater when I was younger, and I could memorize lines really well. And mm-hmm. so if someone got sick, I could fill in for a boy or girl. I was comfortable in either roles there. Mm-hmm. Big reveal. No, I've always been interested in set work from a very early age. I've enjoyed, you know, running lights and design work, that kind of thing.
And you've been doing some of that recently, and we'll talk a little bit more about
sure.
that. But we've got just a few, about 30 seconds before the real...
The magic happens?
The magic moment. Happens.
Okay, then we better listen.
And this, again, we should say, is from...
The Broadway show.
The Broadway show, Evita.
Evita.
What a circus, what a show. Argentina has gone to town over the death of an actress called Eva Perón. We've all gone crazy, mourning all day and mourning all night, falling over ourselves to get all of the misery right. What an exit, that's how to go when they're ringing your curtain down. Demand to be buried like Eva Perón. It's quite a sunset, and good for the country in a roundabout way. We've made the front page of all the world's papers today. But who is this Santa Evita? Why all this howling, hysterical sorrow? What kind of goddess has lived among us? How will we ever get by without her? She had her moments, she had some style. The best show in town was the crowd outside the Casa Rosada crying Eva Perón. But that's all gone now. As soon as the smoke from the funeral clears, we're all gonna see how she did nothing for years.
Salve Regina, Mater Misericordiae, Vita Dulce Noestes Nostra. Salve, salve Regina, Ante clamamus, exules filii Eva, Ante suspiramus dementes, et mentes o clemens o pia.
Let down your people, Evita. You were supposed to have been immortal. That's all they wanted, not much to ask for. But in the end, you could not deliver.
Sing, you fools, but you got it wrong. Enjoy your prayers because you haven't got long. Your queen is dead, your king is through. She's not coming back to you. Show business kept us all alive since 1745 and 1945. But the star is gone, the glamour's worn thin. That's a pretty bad state for a state to be in. Instead of government, we had our stage. Instead of ideas, a Perimedonna's rage. Instead of help, we were given a crowd. She didn't say much, but she said it loud. And who am I who dares to keep his head held high while millions weep? Why the exception to the rule? Opportunist, straight up fool, or just a man who grew and saw from 17 to 24? His country bled, crucified. She's not the only one who's died. Sing, you fools, but you got it wrong. Enjoy your prayer.
because you haven't got long. Queen is dead, your king is through, she's not coming back to you.
Questi luoghi, neanche questi fiori azzurri, via, via, neanche questo tempo grigio, pieno di musica e di uomini che ti sono piaciuti. It's wonderful, it's wonderful, it's wonderful, good luck my baby, it's wonderful, it's wonderful, it's wonderful, I'd remove you, chips, chips, da ti do di do ci boom ci boom boom. Datti du di du ci bo ci bo bo, datti du di du. Via, via, vieni via con me. Entra in questo amore buio, non perderti per niente al mondo. Via, via, non perderti per niente al mondo. Lo spettacolo d'arte varia di uno innamorato di te. Yeah. It's wonderful, it's wonderful, it's wonderful, good luck my baby, it's wonderful, it's wonderful, I dream of you, chips, 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 da-ti-do-di-do, chi-boom, chi-boom, da-ti-do-di-do, chi-boom, chi-boom, da-ti-do-di-do. Entra in questo amore buio, pieno di uomini. Via, via, entra e fatti un bagno caldo. C'è un accappatoio azzurro, fuori piove un mondo freddo. It's wonderful, it's wonderful, it's wonderful. Good luck, my baby, it's wonderful. It's wonderful, it's wonderful. I dream of you, chips, chips. Datti do di do ci bo ci bo bo, datti do di do ci bo ci bo bo, datti do di do.
All right, Shannon, can you tell us a little bit about that song
Yes.
and how it made your list?
Yes. That was Paolo Conte, a wonderful Italian Italian performer, kind of a nightclub type act, but he plays to huge concert halls. He's probably one of, you know, he's the, I don't know how who to compare him to in our country because I don't think we have the equivalent. But, yeah, he's a live entertainer. He's an older man. He was famous when he was older. And this song was so big when I was in Italy. But nice. The reason I have it is that it was in the movie French Kiss, which is this wonderful, wonderful film with Kevin Kline and Meg Ryan. And it's a great romantic comedy. It's set in Paris. And it's set in the south of France, and it features the country really wonderfully. And I never get tired of that movie. I've seen it, you know, more than a dozen times. I mean, that's probably, I'm probably underestimating it by about a dozen. It's embarrassing to say that you've seen a movie like 30 times, but I wouldn't doubt it that yeah. that's the case. But that's one of those movies where if it's raining out or anything, mm-hmm. it's a movie that always puts you in a good mood. Acting's wonderful. The writing's wonderful. It's just one of those great underrated romantic comedies. Mm-hmm. Or that people like to write off as nothing more than a chick flick. But right. It's great.
We're talking with Shannon Hoagland, reporter for the Sitka Sentinel, and our guest for the section of the program that we call Deserted Island. And Shannon's presenting the 10 songs she would choose to have with her, stranded perhaps forever on an island. And it's deserted, so about halfway through the list, which is coming up soon. Here before long, we will also ask Shannon what dessert she would bring to the island. But it's not time for dessert yet. We've got a couple of more songs before we get there.
Well, and I wanted to make a comment and ask you, because
obviously the way you're talking about movies and things, I recall that you used to review movies kind of early in the morning on the radio.
Yeah. That was the regular call
out. And I liked that. And you can tell when you're talking about the movies way you talk about them that you know what you're talking about and you sound like a reviewer. So how come you don't do that anymore?
Why don't I do that anymore? I don't know. It's a, you know, it's a news slot now. It's a, that's the way the programming was set up at the time. There was regular guests, and once a week there would be someone who talked about food, and once a week there'd be someone who talked about computers, and then I had the movie slot.
Yeah.
Was it during the Good Day Show, or was
no,
it?
No, it was at 8:20 in the morning.
Oh, yeah, okay. It was the morning edition slot.
I
yeah.
thought
we just
it
had
was
regular
early.
Guests, and then at some point we just. As more and more nonprofits and more activities began, there was more and more demand for people to say, we want to come in and talk about what we're doing.
It's more of a news slot now. Like, it's more part of the, you know, it's less entertainment, more news. And it's a good way to cover it instead of, like, having to write a 5-minute story. You just have a live interview, and it's a good time for people to be listening. They can find out what's going on in the community. It runs right near the community happening.
So, and over at the Sentinel now, there's Daniel Ulbrich, who is now writing.
He writes hilarious movie reviews.
Do you ever go toe-to-toe and in a review
no,
off?
We have totally different tastes.
Does he even know that you have, you know, the review
history?
Have you ever shared?
No,
that
we
with him?
We he knows I'm really interested in movies because you know I do the Film Society.
You've never walked up and said I could out review you with my eyes closed.
No, he's got a totally different style, and I could never write the way he does. He does a lot of research before he writes his. Mm-hmm. Mine was more like watch the movie and was it good or bad? Blah blah blah. And the reviews we had in the Sentinel were just like a paragraph. And he's actually reviewing movies at the cinema, which we did for a while. We did that for a couple of years, and then the theater shut down.
Right.
Probably because of the reviews.
Thanks, Shannon.
No, when I did the review show, it was videos because I think the theater was not open. And he has a really great arrangement with Scott down at the theater in order to get film reviews in the paper when they're relevant. And then he comes on the air sometimes and talks to... and does his thing there, but he's hilarious, and he does he does know a lot about like Hollywood history. Yeah, we just have totally different tastes, that's all.
Well, good movie talk. Let's step over to Italy. Where did your relationship with Italy begin?
From an Italian exchange student, I think. I mean, when I was in college, I traveled like a lot of people the junior year abroad. Spent a semester in Germany, which is like an awesome place to study. And then I did I got a year rail pass, and I just loved Italy so much. But the rail connection came when a woman named Simona Qualia stayed with the Polson. She was an exchange student. And I went and visited her, and before I went, I thought it was a good idea to study the language. And so I got really into that. I studied with a private tutor for a year, and I fell in love with the language. It absolutely is nothing like German. You know, it's a language you really, really want to speak all the time. Like, I'd finish my lesson, I'd walk around speaking Italian. You know, is this an Italian car? No, this is not an Italian car. This is an American car. Is this a Japanese car? No, it's not a Japanese car. It's an Italian car.
Machina.
Machina Italia. Yeah, it's just one of those languages. It feels good to speak.
Where did you visit?
When I was there, I was outside of Milano in a small town. The town is too small to remember the name of it, but Treviglio was the closest town, and that's a gorgeous little small Italian town that no one visits as a tourist. It's a fairly big center of commerce, I'd say an hour and a half outside of Milan.
For those that haven't been to Italy, what's a little slice of one of the things you love about Italy?
I really like the food, of course. That's stupid. But, yeah, the language first and the food, because I'm not a huge foodie. the language. I love the language. I love hearing it spoken. And I love speaking it. I love having the chance to practice mm-hmm. and have people kind of look at you, because it's an odd language for people to know. Mm-hmm. I mean, as many people speak Italian, and everyone in the country, of course, speaks it, very few people from outside actually know Italian. So if you speak Italian to an Italian, they love it, and they will connect with you right away. So, I mean, I think that that's the, I mean, it's special when you make those connections when you're traveling. Otherwise, you're just walking around looking at buildings
yeah.
and eating food.
Yeah, well, well said. Passeggiato or passeggiata?
Passeggiata.
Did you experience in the communities you were at the late afternoon emergence of
everyone walking around
to walk around yeah. arm in arm and
that's one of my favorite
and just experience
things. I was
other.
Kind of in the middle of nowhere, but yeah, when I traveled a little bit, I did see that. My friend lived in a old refurbished monastery with her family, and it was in the middle of a farm. It all smelled like a farm. You know what a farm smells like?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it smells like fertilizer and manure. it didn't take away from the romance at all, but I wasn't in walking distance of any kind of square or town hall, but we drove into Treviglio quite often and, you know, experienced it there because they have all these nice areas that no cars can go and mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can walk around, look at people and the shops and that kind of thing. Drink coffee.
And eat the gelato.
Yeah, of course.
Well, as always with Italy, you have to come back. And so, let's step back. And I think we're headed to Broadway.
Can I say one last thing
about that last song? The song
yes.
makes absolutely no sense. Like, you know, you hear it's a mishmash, French, Italian, English. There's a line in there that goes, chips, 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 dot do do da do da do da. You know, I'm going to listen to that on the desert island, and when someone picks me up, I am going to know what that means.
And you're going to say, I want a chip.
I am looking forward to learning exactly what was going on with that song.
Well, I like at the beginning of the show, you said that these are songs that you haven't necessarily figured out.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll
that
have,
one definitely not. Yeah, I love it, though.
Well, this is Raven Radio, KCIW Sitka, and this is Deserted Island. Dessert's coming up. Got a couple more songs first. And this is a Broadway offering. Is that right, this next tune? From Rent?
Yes. Oh, my goodness. Wait, do you have the right... See, you don't... I gave you the wrong version.
Okay.
Isn't this fun, the way I, like, pretend like I'm prepared and I'm not?
It's,
Well, it's... I bought these things on iTunes and I realized it was the wrong version. This is the Broadway version.
Oh.
This is a wonderful duet. It's two men singing together. One of them sounds like he is... a woman. He's got a very lovely high voice, mm-hmm. and the other one has a very deep voice. I've seen the show a couple times on Broadway, and I waited out like a groupie. I waited outside the stage door to see the stars, and I got to see them all. It was so awesome.
How did that work out? Were they ducking or were they?
No, and we got lovely pictures. My sister's a big fan of the show. The same older sister really likes Broadway stuff. We got pictures with a guy who later ended up on Law and Order, and I have a really cute picture of her with him. Jesse is his name. This song I love because it's a song about. These two people are kind of isolated in their own little world. They both have AIDS. There's so much cynicism about this show, but I never got that way about it. This is a song about people finding each other, and I picked it because not only do I love the show, but I love the sentiment in this song and the voices, the blending of the two voices. I tried to sing it with Ed Ronco, and we failed.
Which number?
Oh, what number? Did I not give you that either? Let's see. Let's just get into it here. It's on this. Oh, here we go. We were just talking about how we can't read anymore.
we're still up for the task.
This is
it's
so
our eyeballs.
Funny.
Yeah, the eyeballs don't want to read anymore.
Oh, gosh. Rachel, can you see this? It's called I'll Cover You. So, and I wrote down somewhere...
Between the three of us, we have one pair
hilarious.
Of glasses.
It is 19.
You can. Everybody's got things at arm's reach.
Number 19.
Okay, and we're going to start the song here in a minute, but I do have to ask.
Yes.
You don't need to go into painful detail if the memories are too traumatic, but you said you tried to sing it with Ed Ronco, and it didn't work.
What happened? We did okay at the beginning, and then there's a song where it kind of goes off in a minor key, and... yeah, we gave up there. Yeah, I have the karaoke version because I love karaoke. And I love it when I'm singing with someone who can really sing like Ed can. And this one kind of went off the rails. We did okay at the beginning, though. Well, you'll hear. It's musically very challenging.
Christmas bells are
My eyes are bad and my ears are bad.
We'll move. You said 19.
Okay.
Got much baggage to lay at your feet, but sweet kisses I've got to spare. I'll be there and I'll cover you. I think they meant it when they said you can't buy love. Now I know you can rent it, and at least you are my love. One love. Wherever, whatever, I'll be your coat.
You'll be my king, and I'll be your castle.
No, you'll be my queen, and I'll be your moat. I think they meant it when they said you can't buy love. Now I know you can rent it, and at least you are my love. On life, oh my life.
If you're cold and
I'll
you're lonely,
you with a thousand sweet kisses,
you've got one
equal
only with a thousand sweet kisses.
When you're worn out,
I'll cover you with a thousand sweet kisses.
When your heart
I'll cover you.
Länge, länge lever kärleken, vår bästa vän.
Some songs just do it, and that one did. Got the air room singing.
Yeah, it did.
So, some ABBA on the list.
We had some ABBA. I had to, you know, my friend Tom reminded me I had to have some ABBA on because ABBA is so awesome. I love this song. Well, I had a friend named Fernando who spent a year in Sitka. He was an exchange student. He was a much younger friend, and he's someone who always, you know, calls me on Christmas, my birthday, and just a really nice fella that made me think highly of this song. But the nice thing I found out about the song is that there were two versions of it, and the Swedish version is much cooler. We have a chorus that is long love, live love, our best friend Fernando. Fill your glass and rise to toast it to love, Fernando. Play that melody and sing that song to happiness. Long, long live and love that love, Fernando. The other one is more about war. It's like, can you hear the drums, mm-hmm. Fernando? It's about buddies talking about war. This is about love, someone losing love, and, you know, hey, don't give up hope and don't give up. But, yeah, it's a much cheerier song, I think.
So the American version, the pop version for the English version is the war one, and then the Swedish version, what might be the original?
The original version that wasn't written by any of the ABBA people. It was written by their original producer. Yeah, I didn't know any of this. But
so maybe by the time you're done with your island, you'll speak some
this
Swedish.
This was the idea, that I would connect with the Swedish boat that came by, you know, the tanker, the oil tanker, because
yeah,
they don't
go.
Know English. And so they would pick me up, and I would start out by saying, Langa, Langa, Levit Karlikin.
Right.
Var hosta van Fernando. And we would connect right away.
And
you wouldn't need to start drinking wine.
Yeah, you wouldn't tell them about the keg and the art gallery incident.
I wouldn't have to. but you know what? Most people in Sweden probably know the other version, not this one, I'm guessing. But anyway, I think it's I like the way ABBA's so popular. There's no movie connection to this. I have no – there are many movies that play mm-hmm. ABBA, but I'm not really connected to any of mm-hmm. them.
Well, that seems like a song, a great song to just be kind of – dancing around on the island.
When you're, I thought, you know, it's a happy song. It's catchy. Yeah. It's pretty.
Frolicking.
Well, and so happy, frolicking, that those are all words that describe dessert.
Oh, good. Yeah, that's true. That was a good connection, you guys.
Desserts frolicking on the deserted island.
Yes.
I am very excited to hear about your dessert. I do know what it is ahead of time.
Carrying it around like it's a revered family recipe.
I know,
recipe.
And I love
but
that.
But really all it is a Ziploc bag. And this is
keeping
because what happened was I needed a recipe for crepes for some reason. And so I went to the Paulson's house and I stole it from this a book that has a, you know, a five ring binder, and I never returned it. So there, I don't know why I did that. But anyway,
they know where to find you.
They do, except they're on vacation. So they're not listening right now. But this is the thing that appeals to me is at the very top. And it tells you how long it takes to prepare. 5 minutes.
She wants dessert, and she wants it now.
Well, but why crepes? Why? Because,
no, I'm
because
serious.
It takes
such
a short amount of time.
I like things that are simple. We've talked about French and Italian culture. I have a fondness for both of those cultures. And, crepes are just, you know, lovely and simple. There are four ingredients plus whatever you put on them. There's very few recipes in this world that you can say that about, and it's not in itself, it's not super unhealthy. It's usually the stuff you put on it, but it's got eggs, milk, flour, and cooking oil. Am I supposed to read the ingredients?
Oh, that's fine. Oh. I think
we're going to post it.
We are going to post it along with your song list and a recording of the show will be posted forever on kcaw.org under the Deserted Island Archives section under
and
the
a
program
photo.
Tab. And a photo. Shannon Hoagland is a Sitka Sentinel reporter and our guest castaway tonight. And we're more than halfway through the songs. And dessert is being presented. And then we've got some more music of the 10 songs she would choose to have on an island if stranded, perhaps forever.
I want to know what your favorite topping is for your crepes.
Without question, it's Nutella. And if there's whipped cream on hand, I will put that in it for a massive creamy goodness. But yeah,
do you put a lot of Nutella?
I don't.
Okay.
Do you roll it? No monkey business.
Where has all the Nutella gone?
No, I do like Nutella. I love it.
Do you roll it up?
I do. I fold it like a burrito. Like I fold it on two ends. I fold it on two ends and.
You don't want anything to squirt out.
It looks like a rectangle when I'm done with it. And then you can eat it with your hands if you want. And sometimes, in a pinch, I'll eat it cold. And if I'm really organized, I will let the batter sit overnight in the fridge. And that makes them nice and fluffy. But usually it's kind of a last-minute type of dessert. And this isn't in the recipe, but it's really important to have a really good crepe pan. And you don't have to have a crepe pan, something called a crepe pan. I mean, it's nice if you do. I've never learned how to use a real crepe pan, so I don't use that. But, you know, something that's Teflon and really thin, and it doesn't matter if it's beat up, it doesn't ruin the crepe. But the main thing is to pay attention to what you're doing. And there's an old saying about crepes, you throw out the first one. I don't know. Do you do that?
Right. I've heard that. And you pretty much do that, don't you, Ken?
You ruin the first one.
Yeah, that's how I would put it. Yeah, I ruin it.
I mean, I don't throw it out to be wasteful. It just is like pan's not done right or something.
But it seems like that you're like, this one doesn't turn out.
The heat's not right. And you don't have enough oil or you have too much oil or... Anyway,
it's all disaster. Yes. My mom and I made a science of crepe making through my childhood, trying to find the perfect pan, and just making crepes. I'd say five times a year or so, we'd gear up and do them. And when I visit next, I think we'll be making crepes. We've done it all our lives.
And you have the topping.
We have a very specific topping, and never has it changed.
What is it?
It is the.
Powdered sugar
with lemon.
Oh yeah, that's really nice.
On top.
Yes.
Oh, butter. Oh, some butter, powdered sugar, and lemon, and roll it up. Put a little more on the top, and that's it. I've never done anything else with a dessert crepe.
Yeah, I would recommend, there is a really great video online called, it's a YouTube, and it's like, well, let's make pancakes, but it's basically a crepe, because what we call a pancake, other people call a crepe. Mm-hmm. Anyway, you watch, it's an animated film, but it shows, and that's where I first heard about people putting lemon and powdered sugar.
I will watch that.
Yeah, right. you would love it. I think it's French, actually.
Okay.
Or
and
Canadian.
I won't be surprised if there's tale of crepes being eaten this weekend around Sitka and environs. So enjoy your crepes. I think we could move on to music.
One more thing about crepes.
Oh,
it's fun because it can be a group experience.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, kind of fun to be making something while people are sitting in there and they're waiting for their crepe, and then other people want to try to make a crepe. You know, it looks like it's fun, and kids like to try to make crepes. And anyway, that was the last thing I like about it.
It is. It's a party when you make crepes. It is. You gear up and
party in a pan.
Party in a pan. It's about 9:20, and we're here with Shannon, and we're looking for the next song, which is another song from a movie, and it is it's kind of in two parts, so it's a little bit tricky. You're going to have to explain this to me, Shannon.
I will, and I apologize for this, because I thought it would be so easy. I thought everything was on YouTube. And it's not.
Not everything. It's just most things.
No, I thought everything was on YouTube or iTunes. I thought everything was on YouTube or iTunes. And when I was growing up, this is where I realized that you could watch movies in your head by listening to the soundtrack. I own like a million soundtracks because of this. I think they're just, you know, the cheapest one you can have. And so we have, it was my favorite movie at the time, and I won't tell you how many times I saw this movie. But after Superman, the movie came out, like, you know, it was a really awesome movie.
The first Superman with Christopher Reeve.
Yeah, but, I'm trying to remember.
But it has like too much explication.
I liked it.
It's like you spent too much time with Superman, the boy, the baby, the child, the teenager. It's like I don't care about any of that stuff. But in the second, so, you know, that movie came out, and then it took like 6 years for the next movie to come out. There was a huge lag. And so when the next movie was coming out, it was near the end of school, like when I was in eighth grade, and we all went down to the John Dance Theater in Bellevue, and we lined up to see it. I've never done that before. And then, you know, we got into the theater. We loved Christopher Reeve, of course. Mm-hmm. He was just the greatest. And the Superman 2 starts, and it just starts and it does not stop. And I haven't seen too many films that it's a really great idea, and it's an obvious idea where you start with, you know, a sequence from the first movie.
Mm-hmm.
So it starts with this beautiful fanfare that you're going to hear by John Williams, great film composer, of course. So we're going to play the fanfare, but I can't play what followed that. So we're just going to play the overture from the first movie. Mm-hmm. If I had saved my old cassette tape. But I used to listen to that when I was going to sleep. Like if I was at a tennis tournament and I couldn't sleep because I was nervous, you know, I would watch the movie in my head listening to the soundtrack. So it's got John Williams to boot. So we're going to hear the fanfare and then we're going to just pop forward to the overture. So you're going to hear a little bit of a fanfare. I don't even know what a fanfare is. It's just a bunch of brass.
It's a bunch of brass.
I hope you enjoy the Superman 2 fanfare. And and there's something, what is it called? It's called like, there's something attached to this. And I don't know, it's called like Superman Screws Up or something.
Oh, Clark Kent.
Clark Kent Screws Up, yeah. Something like that.
But we might hear part of that.
Anyway, if we don't.
So what we're doing is we're recreating a song from a soundtrack from disparate parts that are not actually the soundtrack.
Right, we probably could have done it more successfully if I had like got onto the audio vault.
I wish like Snoop Dogg was in the studio with us. Here we go.
Okay.
Super Snoop.
Thank you. make a gain, believe me. I'm always chasing rainbows, waiting to find a little bluebird in vain.
Goodman. And that's a song that I would imagine you have played on your own radio show on Raven Radio. Shannon, am I right about that?
You are right. In fact, I played it 2 weeks ago.
And you're back on every other Sunday on
I am.
Anything Goes. When did you start? You were on the air before I even got here. I caught here in late summer, and weren't you already on the air?
I was. I was my first day here. I had met my roommate, Gretchen Henning, the first day I got here, and the second day she took me to the Raven training session, and as soon as I finished, I was on the air with the show, the classical show, the chamber music show.
Mm-hmm.
But the training sessions were really fun. Preston O'Connell was in our group. I think Harry Chartier was in the group after me, so we were all trained about the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we were all kind of classmates, all these people. Like Gretchen and I, we did radio together. I can't remember what her show was. I think she also had a classical show.
I think she
for
did.
A little while. And then she became a reporter, started volunteering, did a few volunteer reports for the news team, and then she was hired,
and then she was hired
to do Morning Edition and to be a halftime reporter. Yeah, she was great.
So we're talking to Shannon Hoagland, Sitka Sentinel reporter, and the year 1990 moved to Sitka, and that's the year that we're talking about beginning in radio training. Who did the training for you?
The training was there was a whole team of people training me. Steve Will trained on the news stuff, and it was fun to meet these people for the first time because Steve looks nothing like his voice. I mean, it's amazing. Absolutely zippo. And I was like, that young guy, Steve Will, wow. And Mary Baker, of course, and Jake was like the scary guy. And Rich did the training for the fundraising because that happened, after I'd been on the air not very long. And who else was here? Rachel Fenimore, I believe, was here before you.
Mm-hmm. Yep. She was chief announcer. Scheduling volunteers,
right.
And that's the job I was hired for,
right?
As a chief announcer when Rachel left.
Yeah, there were three times as many people in here.
Oh yeah, that was a pretty big staff.
Yeah, but that was the. But most of the training was done by Mary, I guess.
Yep.
Mary would have done. She did something called the Art of Radio. That was her class. But there were six classes, like six regular classes, every Monday or Tuesday night,
mm-hmm.
and. You know, it was like a regular class. We got lectures on the music library, and we were told we were supposed to look at every single album in the music library. Like that was
commitment.
Yes, and then we were told we were given very stern lectures about what would happen if we did not file a album correctly. It was lost forever.
Mm-hmm.
And that's true.
You know,
we found albums that were
reported missing for years.
Yes.
Yeah, I've found them before, yeah.
They pop up because the color code, you can't find them. So, well done. Thank you for keeping the library in order.
Well, I didn't. I think I use, it's like me and Rachel and Satara's section now and Cecilia now.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of know, we know each other. We were not going to yell at each other. But there's no scary person anymore to like yell at you for filing things wrong.
I'm furrowing my brow, radio audience.
Well, and now everyone's using the audio, you know, everyone's using the computer.
Mm-hmm. But folks
that
still
new
play.
Contraption.
Folks yeah. still play vinyl, and yeah, they still play CDs.
They do, they do. I know Dan Albrecht does his show all on vinyl. He brings his own music in on vinyl.
What is it about early jazz that appeals to you? Did you grow up listening to...
No, I didn't. I'm not a music person. That's what's kind of...
Any instruments? Do you ever play an instrument?
Yeah, I played percussion for many years, studied privately, and played in the Seattle Junior Symphony. So I was serious about classical music, and that's the music I generally listened to when I was being all nerdy.
Okay, so we've got percussion, meaning the kettle drums or the triangle or
whatever like, was whatever called for. Yes.
Wow.
So I played in band when I was in elementary school, and it wasn't called percussion then. You just played drums. It was just a snare drum and a bass drum.
That was me too.
And then I thought the drummers were so cool, and the people who I thought were so cool turned out to be bullies. Like, they didn't want to have anything to do with me. So I kind of, you know, I went my own direction with, like, the, you know, I stayed in the band and I didn't care what they said. Then my older sister threatened to beat them up, and then they kind of left me alone.
I'm liking this older sister.
She's a force to be reckoned with, let me tell you.
What was the music around your house?
We did not have any music. Like, when Melissa, my older sister, came back with Evita, you know, she played it all the time. But my mom, we generally didn't. We had like five albums. We had The Graduate, we had The Sound of Music, we had Fiddler on the Roof, and those were all related to things we had seen. Like, I didn't see The Graduate, but I'm sure my parents did, like anyone else. And then, you know, my older sisters started buying albums, and my first album that I owned was Barry Manilow. Mm-hmm. It wasn't his greatest hits, though. I own that later.
How many siblings do you have?
I have three siblings. I have three sisters, one older one and two younger ones. And my youngest sister is the one who's super, super musical in terms of having music on all the time. My second to youngest sister is like my mom. Like, there's no music in the house. Like, they do have a, you know, a tape player, you know, they have something that plays music, but when you go in, there's like nothing to listen to. So, and my mom will listen to like klezmer music in the car, and she's got kind of eccentric tastes. But I'm more of a radio person, like, you know, radio versus music person. I like the radio for company. So when I'm home or in the car, I'm listening to Raven, unless I'm super inspired to listen to a particular song. But I don't have, like, I don't go to my CD rack and start playing music. The second I get home, I turn on Raven.
Mm-hmm. Well, what brought you to jazz, early jazz?
Oh, yeah, that's the movies. That is 100% the movies. It's discovering, when I was growing up, just discovering old movies. Bell Book and Candle was the first old movie I saw. And Philadelphia Story and the Fred and Ginger movies. And those... It's like, those are real songs. I didn't really realize that. I thought they were all written for the movies. I didn't realize they were jazz standards.
So how did you discover the movies? Were you watching, like, you know, TV on TV, or did your parents show you the movies? Or
no. Well, I discovered Fred and Ginger through my oma, who was a Dutch immigrant. Mm-hmm. And those were the music movies she watched. And she, you know, she's like a lot of old people where it's like, oh, there's so much trash in the movies today. So it was so much fun to go see something like Top Hat and Shall We Dance with my oma, because, you know, she was right. I mean, those movies were really fun, and they were well written, and there was wonderful music. And I think what I really liked about them was the dancing scenes, the ballroom dancing scenes. I loved them so much. And I think I kind of found the, when I realized that these were standards, I tried to figure out where the songs came from. This is back before computers. Mm-hmm. But it's so easy at Raven because they've got, like, you know, you can just come here and listen to the music and discover it that way. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, you see something like the Palm Beach Story, the Philadelphia Story. Palm Beach Story, especially because it has Rudy Valli in it, and he's singing lovely, his lovely high voice. And... it was definitely through the movies. Once you start listening to it, you don't need to, you know, that's just, it makes its own argument.
Yeah. Well, we've got a couple more songs.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And we should probably, we're going to start off with, I know where we're going to end up. I'm not sure where we're going to start off. So I'll let you tell us what's coming
okay.
up next.
We're going to listen to a song from La Boheme. This is, you know, another, I have no idea what this song is about. I don't know La Bohème very well as an opera. I know this song because there's a great, one of my favorite movies, a movie that I kind of know beginning to end, is Moonstruck, which is the Cher, Nicolas Cage movie, but it's got a ton of other wonderful character actors in it. Mm-hmm. And at the end, this is one of the last scenes of the movie before it all kind of turns into screwball comedy, and it's just, they have a great closing scene that I like so much. But this is a song where Cher has spent the night with Nicolas Cage. She's kind of given up resisting him because he's the wrong person.
She's a wolf.
Trying to make sense of, yes. Yes, and you run to the wolf. That don't make you no lamb. So she's kind of given up. She's given up the ghost. She's decided this is the man she's going to love, and she feels good about it. And the scene is kind of a mix of glamour and kind of city grit all in one. And she's kicking a can down, if you need a visual, she's kicking a can down a street in Park Slope, Brooklyn.
Ritorno
curioso,
dammi il braccio, mia piccina.
Obbedisco, signor.
Che mani di
io t'amo.
And that leaves us with one song left on Shannon Hoagland's 10 songs she would choose to have on an island if stranded, perhaps forever. And What a great list, and nice stories. But
thank you.
We're not quite done.
We aren't.
Are we?
Is the most embarrassing in my collection. We did talk earlier about, like, I guess the thought that I would never want a song that was really important to me ruined because I was listening to it too many times. Mm-hmm. So I feel that way about this song. I like it a lot. It's a lot of fun. I don't have any movie associations with this song, but every time it's on, I feel like dancing. And when I'm with, there's a group of kids I know that love this song, and I would probably think of them if I was on the island and be cheered up or sad or something. It would evoke some kind of feeling. But
okay, well, it's a good song to wrap up a day. So let's talk a little bit about your typical day, and maybe not too deep, but what's one of the most interesting things about being a reporter in a small town?
The most interesting thing is just the number of people you meet and getting to hear their stories. And I would, the best thing about being a reporter in general is the non-routine, the every day you're doing something different. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that's really great is writing. I just really enjoy writing and enjoy writing with purpose. So it's like I'm writing for a reason, and yeah, that's the best part of the job. I mean, the other things I do in my day, you know, I do the blotter, and that's kind of really routinized, but you never know what you're going to find. And I do, I lay out page 2,
mm-hmm.
And that's kind of not very exciting. This week was kind of interesting because the bosses were out of town, so everyone was doing other people's jobs, and everyone had to learn to do new things and try their hand at new things. And being able actually to pick out stories for my page was a novelty for me, and picking out stories for the front page with Cindy and James was a novelty, and Tom, of course. Yeah, it was fun to have that sense of teamwork. And, yeah, the bosses are never out of town. I'm so happy that they got to do that this week. But it was also fun and a little bit more stressful, but a break from the routine.
Well, and interesting, to point out, I haven't noticed any you know, mm-mm, any changes. You've kept things great.
Yeah, well, no one's, like, called to complain about horrible headlines, but I noticed writing headlines is really, really hard. Like, yeah. I notice that mine aren't exactly perfect. Like, I can even up the ends and stuff. I can come up with a word to make it make sense, but you know, headline writing is super tricky. There are a lot of rules to it, and you can't, like, make it bigger to fit. You know, you have to things have to look right. You can't make it like the top line more spaced out and the one underneath all squished up because you like the headline. You know, you have to count out the letters and
So you're revealing things that we just take for granted. The headline has to be written. It doesn't just show up for every story, national and local.
Right.
And it has to be accurate. It has to relay what the story is about, and no more, no less, and no different.
Yeah.
But it also has to fit. You can't just.
That's
have
the
a
hardest
big,
part because if you want to lead with the superintendent selection story, that's got to be the biggest headline. Mm-hmm. And so, how are you going to make the words fit? This is the word superintendent. And then, you know, when they hire someone, it's you curse them because their name's too long or too short.
Right.
You know, Bradshaw is a little harder to fit or easier to fit, whatever, than Wegner. So maybe, you know, it's there are certain people, like, you know, when Obama was elected. I mean, It made it a little harder for Sandy because Bush was so much easier to fit into a headline.
Right. Dewey,
right.
Dewey fit.
Yeah.
Dewey didn't win.
I mean, there are various ways to cheat in headline writing. So we're learning. I'm learning the techniques. But,
well, and you don't want to end up on The Tonight Show. Isn't that where they used to show the funny headlines?
Yeah. Well, Sandy just has nightmares about that. But Sandy does write all the headlines, and she does try to make them different from the ones that are suggested by the Associated Press. Like, she always tries to go the extra mile to have some alliteration, and yeah, I'm really impressed by that after this week.
All right. Well, that's good. Before we go to the last song, wanted to talk a little bit about what you're doing recently, and I think this is a nice lead in here. We've got a promo for an event coming up that you're associated with.
If you're a filmmaker of any age and think you can handle the task of making a film in just 2 days, we're looking for you for the sake of 48 Hour Film Festival. Signups will be February 28th, 5 to 7 p.m. 713B Sawmill Creek Road. We'll give you a copy of the rules and a donut. We're getting crazy with cameras.
The 48 Hour Film Festival is right around the corner. And Rachel and I have participated. We didn't get to do it last year. And I'm not going to be in town this year. But tell us a little bit about when and what.
Well, if you're not going to be in town, we can make our own separate rules for you. So if you decide you want to do it. We are serious about that donut, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I was wondering.
Yeah.
So, okay.
We always have donuts.
I think there was a treat
finals.
When I came a couple
of
years ago.
Yeah, I have nothing to add to the to this gathering of filmmakers, because Van is a filmmaker. Van and all his friends, they actually make films, edit them. And I kind of, because I'm the film society, he came to me to be the sponsor of the event. And I, you know, help put up posters, get the printing done, but he's kind of more, he's the artist and he's the creative person. So yes, I do bring donuts. That's why I think we put that in there.
Yeah, well, that's important.
But yeah, the 48-Hour Film Festival is sponsored by the Film Society, but in it you get to, you know, you get a set of rules and then you have 48 hours to make a film. And it's super fun. And then the films are shown at the Coliseum Theater.
It was an amazing experience. I highly recommend it to everybody. It was, it was intense and it was fun and it was crazy and I loved it.
And the great part was that we hadn't made a film. Well, it was Rachel's project and I was the key grip or whatever you call me. So,
Did you hold the camera?
I did a little acting. I held the camera. But I think the key thing was that we'd never made a film. We didn't know how to make a film. We didn't know what that meant.
And I'd taken
all
the
we
screenwriting
had was a point,
class.
Oh, right.
And that
we had a point and click. So you didn't. We didn't
shoot,
have special gear. We just had a little
35 millimeter camera.
Yeah.
Cool pics.
Yeah.
A little. Yeah. And we made the movie with that. And free software.
Yeah.
So it was, we learned how to do it and it was great. And Van was wonderfully supportive. Mm-hmm. So if it's an idea that's interesting to you, I would encourage you to investigate it and give it a go.
Yeah, give it a go because
it's a
thrill
ride.
It really is.
Because you can make a movie in 48 hours. And the other thing is to go and view them. Is incredibly, it's so impressive what people can put together in 48 hours. And it's just another one of those ways that when you get done, you think you're just so impressed with the community that we live in. So that's my plug.
Yeah, thank you for doing that. I love watching the films, but, you know, I always know, like, what the rules are in advance, and it's always fun to see, you know, what gets turned in.
Oh, yeah. So what a spoiler, but any, what are the rules?
The rules, yeah. I'll give them to you now so we can start thinking about the ideas.
Well, I guess we don't have time for that. We better move on to the final song of your 10, Shannon.
What can I say about this song?
Ace of Base.
And I was really shocked that Ace of Base is spelled B-A-S-E. Mm-hmm. Like, that makes no sense. It should be like the Ace of Base, like B-A-S-S.
Boom.
So I had trouble finding this.
Boom.
Yeah, I had trouble finding the song initially. But yeah, this is, I guess I do have a sentimental connection to this. This was the song where I realized my youngest sister was a really good dancer because she was dancing to this song. So I guess there's my sentimental connection.
We'll be right back.
And that marks the last song in the 10 that Shannon Hoagland would choose to have on an island if stranded forever, perhaps. And luckily, that is not the case. It is time to rescue Shannon from her island and deliver her safely home. Is that a helicopter on the horizon or a helicopter?
Well, it's both.
It's a both. Helicopter's coming in.
We're lowering down the basket.
Jump in the basket there, little miss. Is that Swedish?
And your little dog, too.
My heroes.
Thank you, Shannon.
Thanks so much for having me on your super cool show.
Well, it's been really
I never
great.
Thought this would happen because you always have like celebrities on.
Well, you're a celebrity.
Much cooler people.
You are a celebrity, Shannon. Great list, great stories. Thanks again. This is Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka.